So, last time we got through love and compassion, okay? So based on equanimity, we see sentient beings as our parents, particularly our mothers, because of that close relationship, and then seeing their kindness, wanting to repay their kindness, heartwarming love, which sees them as lovable. So that's a big step, you know? I mean, to really see all different sentient beings as lovable. And you can see that to really do that in a completely full way, having an understanding, well, first of all, this whole method necessitates having an understanding of rebirth. I mean, you can do it without an understanding of rebirth, but it's not, and you can do it saying, you know, I don't know if I believe in rebirth or not. You can do that and have some good results from it, but it's not going to have the same impact as if you start really looking at sentient beings and thinking that you've had relationships with them that have been very close and very protective and very caring multiple times since beginningless time. You know, if you only look at them as who they are in this life, then of course the appearance of an inherently existent jerk is quite strong, you know, and you don't think them of them as a karmic bubble, because if you only think of this life, there's no karma, you know. We're just kind of born by accident as who we are and die, and that's the end of it, go out of existence. But if you really think of people as being products of karma, that they're not any kind of inherently existent personality or person, that who they are, you know, when I say a karmic bubble, they're just, you know, a manifestation of whatever karmic seeds happen to ripen at that time. And whatever karmic seeds are ripening during their whole lifetime, you know, that influence their habitual actions, their attitudes, and where they grow up, and, you know, so what they're conditioned in this lifetime. Yeah, so it gives you a much broader view in that way, and it's really quite helpful in terms of understanding that sentient beings they aren't inherently existent with some kind of solid personality. Yeah, so do you see somehow how rebirth and emptiness go together? Yeah, like I said, you can benefit from the Buddhist path without that, but to really go deeply, yeah, they very much work together. You know, because it's only because sentient beings that are empty of inherent existence that then they can be in different forms and different relationships to us in different lifetimes and even in different situations in this lifetime, okay? And so then seeing that, then that kind of reinforces, yeah, they aren't some kind of concrete personality, which then reinforces, well, yeah, we've had all sorts of relationships. So it kind of goes back and forth that way. But it helps you, you know, especially if you have a problem with somebody in this life, to think, well, whoever this person is, you know, they haven't always been this person who they are in this life. Yeah, that they've been all sorts of other people in previous lives. And so I might be having a problem with them in this life, but in previous lives, we were very close. And in future lives, we're going to be very close. And so that really helps us. It broadens the mind and gives some space for us to think about having a different relationship with somebody, because we know that that person is not who they appear to be in that particular moment in this life. Yeah, that what we're labeling that person, yeah, is the general I that is labeled in dependence upon the eyes in all the different lifetimes. Okay, so yeah, it gives us some space to not feel cornered and trapped, with the same kind of negative attitude towards somebody. And similarly, to not feel cornered and trapped by the same kind of attachment and feelings of obligation and expectations and all of that, because all these relationships are changing all the time. Yeah. So I think that's very helpful. Yeah. And so especially as we're going, you know, progressing through these seven causes and effects to generate bodhicitta, you know, to bring emptiness into it really helps considerably. Yeah. And I think even to have the idea, the foundation of all of this, of equanimity, equanimity, that also involves some bringing a knowledge of emptiness into it. Yeah, because again, if everybody were solid, concrete people, the relationships couldn't change, the personalities couldn't change, nothing, everything would be fixed. Yeah, so it really gives a lot of space there. Okay, so then you can see, okay, you know, like maybe there's a rabid dog who bit you, who, you know, now you have all the problems of having a rabid dog that bit you. But, you know, whoever that living being is, isn't, they always haven't been a rabid dog, and they won't always be that dog. And they have been your kind and loving mother. And you go, what? That rabid dog has been my kind and loving mother? Well, why not? We've had beginningless lifetimes. There's plenty of time, you know? And then if you start looking at that dog, you know, through the eyes of, well, this is my mother. Yeah, maybe not my mother of this life, but, you know, mother previous lives. And I'm not recognizing them because of the karma they created that caused them to be born in that kind of realm, doing those kind of activities. You can still open your heart and have some compassion for that dog. Yeah. So they often give the example, which I find very helpful. Like, let's say you had a really close relationship with your mother or father, whoever brought you up, you know? And then something happened and you were separated from them for many, many years. And then one day you were walking down the street and you looked and there's this very old person, you know, sitting on the street begging, and all of a sudden you realize, oh my goodness, you know, that's my mother, father, babysitter, whoever it was. And they're sitting on the curb begging. And, you know, you'd feel surprised, but would you just walk by that beggar if you realized it was the same person who took care of you when you were a little baby? No way, you know. No matter how that beggar looked, you would say, Mom, you know, or Dad, or whoever it is, you know, and I'm going to help you. I mean, automatically that feeling of love is going to come for that person, even though maybe they're dirty and they, you know, they haven't taken a shower in a few weeks and, you know, they're wearing old raggedy clothes. Once you recognize them as having been your kind parent in this life, all of that, you know, what's it called, prejudice goes away, and all of that apathy goes away because you recognize them. So in the same way, if we really train ourselves to see that all sentient beings have been our parents and remember the kindness, then when you see other sentient beings, yeah, there's that same feeling of like kind of recognizing this person who was your kind mother, father, babysitter, caretaker, caregiver, you know, in a, you know, and there they are again, and having that same feeling of warmth and affection come up towards them. Yeah? So I think that's quite helpful, you know, if we can train our mind to look at sentient beings in that way. They say, I think it was Atisha, you know, whenever he met different sentient beings. In his mind, he would say, you know, that's my mother, so kind of, hello, mom. Yeah, and see, you know, immediately adopt that feeling of closeness and intimacy with that person. And I think His Holiness very much has that kind of attitude, yeah, when you see Him with people. You know, automatically this feeling of warmth towards people. So, yeah, so it's possible for us to develop that too. Okay? And so then, having developed the love and compassion, then the sixth step is the great resolve. And so this is making a strong determination to get involved in making the situation better. Okay? So they often give the analogy that, you know, it's the difference between you're standing on the edge of a pool and somebody's drowning in the pool, and you're going, oh my goodness, somebody's drowning, you know, quick, save them. You go in and jump, you know, jump in and save them. You know, because you have compassion, you don't want them to drown, but you're not jumping in yourself, you know, because you have your nice lace dress on and, you know, your makeup will get smeared in your hair. You know, you just had it done, you don't want it to get undone. So, you know, please, you jump in. Whereas this the person with the great resolve is, I'm jumping in and there's no thought. It's just, boom, you do it, you know. And here I think of, you know, I was so impressed with this one man. It was right before Obama's first inauguration, I think. And he was in New York or D.C. somewhere, and a child fell onto the subway tracks, and this man, in a split second, even though he had his own child with him, jumped on the tracks, laid on top of that child, and the subway went right over them and didn't kill them. I mean, and this guy did it without, it was just spontaneous, you know? So that's, for me, I mean, I can't believe somebody did that. You know, they invited him to the inauguration. I mean, he was really a hero. But, you know, that's making the resolve that I'm going to do something. Yeah, I'm not standing by and wishing for it. It's not just in my mind, but I'm doing something. And then at that point, that leads you to ask, well, okay, you know, in my present state, am I really capable of doing whatever I can? I have all these wishes to be able to benefit sentient beings, but am I capable of fulfilling them? Yeah, I have this love and compassion. You know, I want making a commitment to get involved, but do I have the capability to really carry through? You know, do I have the knowledge to do it? Do I have a sufficient compassion? Do I have the skill to do this? You know, and then you realize, well, you know, no, I'm kind of one screwed up sentient being myself. Yeah. And so, you know, if I'm really going to carry out what I would like to carry out, what I've committed myself to carrying out, then I have to work on myself. I have to free myself from all the hindrances, develop in myself all of the good qualities. And, you know, although I can help now, the help I'm able to give is limited if I'm able to purify my mind completely, gain all the excellent qualities, then the help that I'm able to give will be limitless. Yeah? And so then, so those first six were the causes, and then the seventh in the seven-point instruction is bodhicitta, where you then generate the, you know, aspiration. I think it's got to be more than an aspiration. I think it's got to be a determination. You know, aspirations are easy. Yeah, I aspire for this, I aspire for that. I think it's, we need determination. Yeah, and so you have that determination that I'm going to become a Buddha for the benefit of sentient beings. Yeah. And at that point, you know, then you have, when you've, remember last night we went through the stages of aspiring bodhicitta with promise, and then engaging bodhicitta. So at that point, you know, when you have the full determination, then you're going to have the engaging bodhicitta. But of course, you know, when you first generate that, you're actually having, you know, for the first time, it's probably aspiring bodhicitta, and then it fades a little bit, and then it's the actual aspiring bodhicitta with commitment, and then, you know, it becomes engaging. Okay, and then, you know, in order to do what we're setting out to do, then we engage in the six perfections. Okay, so if you're ever bored and you don't know what to do, remember this. Yeah, there's lots to do. Yeah, I mean, for people who have problems with being bored, I always recommend Dharma practice. Yeah, you never get bored. There's always something to do.